Bullaboomy.
बरो दीस दिव तुमका सगळ्यांक हांव रिची स्वागत आनी नमस्कार करता आयच्या सुशेगाद तनपार रेडिओ प्रोग्रामार. ह्या वर्सा न्यूझीलंडान सप्टेंबरांत पार्लमेंटरी इलेक्शन आसा. आमकां सर्व जणांक एक जबाबदारी आसा की आमी आमचो फ्रँचायज चिंतून वापरा जाय. कास्ट आवर वोट्स व्हेरी थॉटफुली. इट इज ओन्ली देन वी गेट अ गुड अँड इफेक्टिव्ह गव्हर्नमेंट. एज थॉमस जेफरसन सेड, the government you elect is the government you deserve. Wo program current affairs program jaun asa. Ya programar ami kanchai partik ya kanchai candidate ak promote karna. We seek to know more about the candidate, his or her values and principles, the policies of his party, and share with them the needs what our community want. Amcha studiont aaj asa Mr. Mahesh Bindra. एनजेड फर्स्ट असो लिस्ट एमपी सप्टेंबर 2014 तो इलेक्ट जालो आणि तो जाऊन असा एनजेड फर्स्ट असो स्पोक्स पर्सन फॉर पोर्टफोलिओज ऑफ करेक्शन कस्टम्स एथनिक अफेअर्स अँड लँड इन्फॉर्मेशन. ताच्या सांगाता चर्चा आणि उलोंक आमच्या कम्युनिटीत जाऊन जेनी लोबो आणि ॲस्टन डिसिल्वा आज आगा हजार असात. सो मिस्टर बिंद्रा, वेलकम टू आर प्रोग्राम.
थँक यू रिचर्ड अँड Thanks for having me on your program. Thanks for this opportunity. And it's lovely to see three gentlemen here from the Konkani-speaking community and a beautiful Konkani-speaking lady, Jenny.
So, Mahesh, if I may call you Mahesh.
Please do. Please call me Mahesh.
Okay. Tell us something about yourself and if you prefer about your family and how you came to be in politics.
Richard, I was born in Mumbai in a suburb called Sion, and I went to a South Indian Education Society college, did political science degree, BA honors in political science and psychology from Mumbai University, which is now Mumbai University. It used to be Bombay University earlier. So, grew up in Mumbai, and in addition to having those formal qualifications, my family, my ancestors were politically active people, although none of my ancestors contested any elections, but they had a huge influence in the wider community.
So, what impact has it had on you as such? In terms of your upbringing, did you participate actively in politics back in India? Or I think you would have been to SIES College, if I may understand, because you said yes. South Indian Education
yes.
Society. So did you participate in those student elections and student campaigns and thereafter at the local levels?
Well, informally, yes, although I did not stand for any elections in India. But I did take active interest in local politics.
Oh, that's fantastic, Mr. Bindra. This is Alston De Silva. Now, coming back, bringing it back home to New Zealand, you see, a majority of Indians, despite their liberal upbringing, are traditional and tempered by religious ethos. Some find it difficult to cope in an environment like New Zealand. Others just slip into new places very easily. So how did you manage to hit the mainstream here, and what approach did you adopt?
I'm glad you asked that question. As far as the religious ethos are concerned, I've been lucky that, you know, I had exposure to other religions also other than the one that I was born in, which is Hinduism. I've had a large number of Roman Catholic friends. And my next door neighbor was an elderly lady called Mrs. Lucy Simoes. She was from Bardez and a very devout Catholic. Mm-hmm. So in my earlier years, I had a great interaction with her. Other than, you know, in addition to my own religion, I also got an insight into what a devout Catholic is meant to do and how they are meant to conduct themselves. So that was a great influence, because even when I was not a Catholic, she used to pray for me when I used to write my exams. I think that saw me clear all my exams.
That's so true. We all required prayers, I think, when we did our exams.
She used to do the rosary when I used to be writing the exam. And it so happened that then when she passed away, her son actually asked me to arrange for the funeral. And I was asked to put the first handful of mud.
That's wow. That's really fantastic.
So that was really touching.
Very touching.
Said, Uncle Stan said to me, he said, look, Baba, you have looked after Mama for 3 years. So I think you should do what I am supposed to do also.
So now we can say you are also part Catholic.
I'm open to all other religions.
I think that's the best part of India, isn't it? We all share each other's religions without any bias. Like, I know a lot of Hindu stories about Hindu mythology. And I have friends who tell me, you're one of the people who actually talks about it.
Yeah, that's so true. Because I remember in school, we were always taught unity in diversity.
That's right.
That's right.
Unfortunately, there have been incidents where not all of us have followed that kind of a line. But you would expect that in a country of 1.25 billion people, you would expect some who would not be with the mainstream society. But in general, the people of Indian origin are very open to others, other religions and cultures.
Yes.
So I think that the initial upbringing has a lot of impact on you as you grow up. I think that would have exposure to just I was just fortunate to have that exposure to other religions, and we were not brought up in watertight compartments. Mm-hmm. We were encouraged to respect others.
In that respect, Bombay is a big melting pot of all cultures, religion, practices.
Indeed it is, Richard. You would have seen that what they call society. An apartment block is called a society there, right?
Yes, right.
In an apartment block, there are typically about 20 to 50 apartments.
Yeah, yeah.
So in those 50 apartments, you would see that there are all cultures from within India, all languages spoken, and all religions celebrated by those societies.
And it's practiced by, celebrated by everybody.
That's right. You would see that societies have Ganpati Utsav, and the societies have their Christmas celebrations, and those societies also have Eid celebrated within them.
Yes, true. You grew up in Mumbai. We got that from what we've been speaking, and worked in the hospitality sector. You also said you have an understanding of the Konkani language, which is perfect, and you have many friends here who do speak this language.
Yes.
But your presence in the local community at the grassroots level is pretty light in comparison with your elevation in the New Zealand First Party. What is it that is missing, or why is this disconnect?
I would not like to think that there's a disconnect. I have attended your Tiat and other celebrations, and I have tried to get a better understanding of the Konkani speaking community. I actually tend to go anywhere that I'm invited, irrespective of what the background of those groups is. However, I am a bit shy. I don't go to places uninvited. So I think that must be the reason.
That you're not seen very often, is it?
I think I'm slightly more visible than the others. It is just that there are groups in every community. Some groups tend to be affiliated to particular parties.
Right.
So I have noticed that there are community organizations. They call themselves community organizations. They call themselves politically neutral. The reality is they are not. So, we do get invites from some communities, and we don't get invites from some others.
Okay. And you would say that would be the reason why we see that you are not that often seen, because you are not invited often enough by all communities or various communities.
No. What happens is that, as I mentioned, there are community organizations who claim to be politically neutral, but the reality is they are not. And we don't really force ourselves onto others, because we have a certain amount of self-respect. We tend not to go to places uninvited.
On that note, let us hear a song.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Tu sapna deta hai, tum mohan khelta hai, mera jana jata hai, hoga tu gaya sajai. Sapna deta hai, tum mohna khelta hai, isse chena zata hai, hoga tu gaya sai. Rosar moina pus pa lari,
ऐकतात सुशेका दनपार रेडिओ प्रोग्राम. आज आज आमच्या संगत असा महेश बिंद्रा लिस्ट एम पी फ्रॉम एनझेड फर्स्ट आणि त्याच्या संगत चर्चा करूंग असात एल्स्टन डिसिल्वा आणि आमची बाय जेनी लोबो. सो यू लेफ्ट अस अ बिट somewhere in between your answer, Mahesh. Basically, we were trying to find out what's your strategy to up the number of support that you get from the local community in your electorate. If you look at your vote share, it is around 8.66% today for NZ First with about 11 MPs, much below the 13.35% and 17 MPs in 1996. And the landscape is changing. If you see, the landscape is changing for all the political parties, Labour, Greens, and the National in particular. How does your position as a NZ First MP and that of the party vote stack up for 2017? What is your expectation? How do you want to grab this opportunity?
It's more to do with work than opportunities, Richard. When we say the vote share in the community has been low, I must tell you that in 2014, I was the only candidate in the electorate who actually told the voters, particularly the voters from the Indian communities, not to vote for me.
Why is that?
I told them not to vote for me, but give us the party vote. So we were focusing on party vote more than the individual candidate vote. That was a brilliant strategy because we were a relatively smaller party. So because we were only asking for party votes, that the candidates are all, the voters thought, oh, so these guys mean business. These guys know that there's no point them fighting for or asking for individual candidate vote. they are going for party vote, so they are more focused on their party rather than their own political career.
But isn't that what MMP is all about, getting the party vote that you get the number of MPs into
absolutely,
parliament?
Absolutely, you hit the nail on its head.
So that's why all the parties only ask for party vote most of the time.
Well, the bigger parties have got away with asking for both. And that's the reason that they... But now they have started realizing that party vote is as important as a candidate's vote.
Yeah.
So that has been our strategy. And this time also, I'm not going to be asking people to vote for me. It's my party that is important.
So you value the principles of your party, the value, the importance of your party, rather than you as an individual.
Rather than as my own personal political gains, I am more focused on my party's policies and my party's future.
Talking about your party, Mr. Bindra, your party rides on the charisma of Winston Peters, with the emphasis on anti-immigration, anti-privatization, and a significant government role in infrastructure projects or strategic assets, including setting up of a sovereign fund. We have witnessed domestic polarization of voters under the protection policy regime in the USA, UK. Peters called this a common sense policy. So for you as a List MP in 2014 and as an immigrant, why align with a political party which has emphasis on anti-immigration?
Now let's talk about immigration policy first. Although people love to call us anti-immigrant, that is not the reality. We are anti-mass immigration, unfocused immigration, and low-quality immigration. We do realize that we are a small country and we will need skilled immigrants. You and I are part of that pool, isn't it?
Yes.
We were all skilled people when we came into this country. All of us, I think almost all of us, came here after we got the PR, right?
Yeah.
We haven't come here as refugees. We haven't come here as unskilled laborers, right? We are highly skilled people. We brought in a lot of resources with us. We brought in a lot of skills with us. We brought in a lot of experience with us. We brought in a lot of ethics with us, right? So we are not anti-immigration. We are anti-mass immigration. We are for focused quality immigration. So that's one thing. Now, talking about the... what was the other part of your question?
So, I mean, basically, the way, because we most are immigrants, the question is, why do you align yourself with a political party? Or what are your views, basically, from a New Zealand First perspective? You know, as a New Zealand First party, why have you aligned it with the...
That's because I'm a New Zealander now, right? And we believe that... Now, let's take our sort of description of what a New Zealander is. We believe that anybody who is here legally, anybody who's committed to New Zealand is a New Zealander, whether he or she has come yesterday or 1,000 years ago.
Okay. So would you say that the students who come in on a student visa, and because you see a lot of them come in on a student visa and you've seen how difficult it is for them to live and to survive and to do all those things, isn't that what Winston Peters is backing up an anti, because we see the recent issues that we had?
What we are doing is that we have actually spoken against the the student, what they call is export education sector. Now, the export education sector would actually mean that students come here, they spend their resources here, they finish their studies here, and then they go back as educated people. But the education sector has been used to bring in students, take their money, and then give them permission to work for 20 hours, which drives our wages down, which drives the job opportunities for our locals here down, and it also opens the poor students to exploitation by their own employers. Most of them are from the same country that the students have come from. We have done an expose. I and my colleague Richard Prosser, Member of Parliament, we did an expose 1.5 years ago, or nearly 2 years ago, in a place called Opotiki, in the orchard, the kiwi fruit orchards. we found there that there were cases where up to about 20 students were housed in a four-bedroom house. They were given a bag of rice and a bag of dal.
Really?
Yeah. And they were paid between $4 to $5 an hour as against the minimum wage. There were some cases where there was no money paid to those students. The money was paid in India. They were only fed here. They were made to work for up to 70 hours a week as against the authorized 20 hours. And there was a huge exploitation going on there.
And this was by a similar person from the same country that they came from.
That's right. It has also happened that there were contractors who came on a temporary visa. They started contracting companies. They hired these students, paid them back in India, and then they did not pay anything to IRD. And after the fruit picking season, they would just wind up the company and go back. Come the next season, after 1 year, and do the same thing again.
So Mahesh, what you're saying is that your party's policies are not anti-immigrant, but they are basically directed at ensuring that immigration is more legalized, more followed to the law, and doesn't impact the job opportunities for the key visas.
Well, what we want is that we do realize that we will need immigrants all the time because we are a small country. But we need people who we need, not who need us. Those people who come here, they get their PR, then they get their citizenship, and next flight they are off to America or Australia or wherever else, and then they make a positive difference to their economies, not ours.
Sometimes, as the back door.
Yeah, they have done that, and I've known of hundreds of cases where the young couples have come here, got their both sets of parents here. That means one young couple with four of them, the four parents, right? They have left them behind here to be looked after by a New Zealand taxpayer, and they have fled the country.
Very true. I know many people of that sort. Mm. Yes.
So for once, I'm not saying
no.
No, you're not saying
something. Absolutely correct.
Hi, let's leave this immigration point behind now. I think we spent some time on it. Lisa, I have another question. New Zealand First Party broke away from National in 1993 and then later aligned with National Party again in 1996. And then in 2005, they aligned themselves with Labour. The caucus currently sits on the crossbenches and has tended to vote with the opposition against the government policies at present. Who would you personally like New Zealand First to align with, and why? Or is there a reason why you align with different parties at different points of time?
Jenny, it will be inaccurate to say that New Zealand First broke away from National. We did not break away from any other party. The leader was a member of the National Party, and then when he was sent out from the party, he started his own party called New Zealand First. And whenever we have cooperated with any particular party, we have not gone back on our word, one thing. And we have always affiliated with others or helped others based on our own principles and our own policies. So that's the bottom line. We will not allow them to sell as state assets because we do believe that these assets were built by New Zealanders for hundreds of years of taxes, right? So it's unfair for one political party to sell the assets that have been built by generations of Kiwis. So we're talking about the 2005 and 2003, did you say? We are open to working with other parties, right? But we will not give a blank check to anybody.
Okay, so on that note, I'll just leave you with this question and we will go to a song. But I'll leave you with this question to mull over it. Is that how would the voters know what a vote for New Zealand First would mean for whether it's a coalition with Labour or with National? So I'll leave that question with you for the moment until we listen to this wonderful song.
Okay, Richard.
Welcome back. You're listening to Sushika Dhanpar, and we have in our studios Mr. Mahesh Bindra from New Zealand Fest, along with Alston and Jenny, chatting up with him. So, Mr. Bindra, we left with that question for you, is that in the event of you getting a substantial vote, how would you be telling the voters that their vote is for a coalition with Labour or with NZ First?
We have actually always fought elections based on our principles and our policies. We are not anybody's proper party. We have our own voters, we have our own principles, and we have our own policies, and voters vote for us. Now, as far as the coalition or the future probable coalition is concerned, we have, as you know, that we have worked with both parties equally successfully. Whenever we have formed a coalition, we have given our, we have kept our word. Now, it'll be actually disrespectful to the voters if we decide before the elections, before the voters have voted, before they have made up their mind, before they have cast their vote, if we decide that we are going to prop up this one or that one, that'll be very, very disrespectful to the voters. That's one thing. That's what we believe in. Now, secondly, you can't really play your cards unless you have been dealt the cards. So, we do not know what the voters think. So, whatever coalition arrangements have to be made, they'll be based on the election results. And we are nobody to predict that.
But then that means when we vote for New Zealand First, even though we know you're a minor party as public, general public, we wouldn't know whether that vote that we have given goes with National or Labour. It could go with either.
Well, yes, in the past it has happened.
Yes.
So we don't make false promises, and we do not prop up parties.
Right.
So bringing you on to the needs of the community, Ms. Abindra, so the education sector is running on the back of immigrant students from China and India, as we were talking about before. Some of these education institutes have come under the scanner for their poor standards, dodgy practices. You know, what is New Zealand First's response to the import and your guidance to the Indian students on the student visas?
I'm glad you brought that up, Elston. We were the ones who had exposed some of those educational institutes. We were the ones who gave a list to the government. The government said that, okay, we are going to blacklist so-and-so. 4 months after some of them had been banned, blacklisted, we saw posters in Bangalore and Delhi of the same immigration, the education agents. We gave that to the government. Nothing happened. So we are the one who had exposed this, but it still goes on.
So what's your message to the Indian students? What would you tell them? Because the students are at the receiving end. So those poor boys have paid heaps of money back home to come to this country.
They've taken loans from their families.
So
and
what's
all that.
Your what is message to them?
There's huge exploitation in that student sector. What has happened is that there are some unscrupulous agents. The agents own the agency in India. The same group of people own the education institutes or whatever they called. They called PTEs, aren't they?
Yeah.
The private training, private teaching establishments.
Establishment.
So the same group owns that. The same group also owns a number of businesses. These students are brought from India. They are admitted in these training institutions. Some of them do not have decent classrooms. There are 4 classrooms and they have 200 students registered. So you can imagine the quality of education being provided there. The same group of students then are employed sometimes unethically, unofficially and illegally by the businesses owned by this group. So it's a whole chain, you know.
So, what you're saying is then students from India should actually be looking for universities that are New Zealand universities rather than these teaching institutions.
The students should actually do their own research very carefully and not fall prey to these people who actually cheat them.
Yeah.
So they pay a lot of fees there. We have heard of this. Some parents have actually sold their property, sold their houses to pay for these people.
Yeah. Because the picture at the other end, I think, is more like you will be able to settle in New Zealand if you do education.
That is exactly right. I have met students who have been told that the minute you land in New Zealand, you will get a job and you'll be able to pay your fees from that job. Mm-hmm. And you'll be able to also support yourself, which is when they come here and they see that that's not the case.
Yeah.
They can't survive in $5 and $4 an hour.
No.
With just 20 hours to work for them.
So what will New Zealand First do as a party if you'll join the government or you'll form a government, whichever party you go with? What will be your party's view in terms of dealing with these students? What will we all do in particular? Would you all be... by stopping that? Would you all be putting restrictions? What would you all be doing?
We will revamp the whole education industry. But that's what we will do. That these institutes who have been operating unscrupulously, we will stop them. And then students will be protected from exploitation.
So
they'll be made aware before they start from India that, look, this is the reality. So don't be fooled by these people.
Will that impact our economy with knowing that so much of the economy is dependent on the education sector? Will that...
What
is your view on that?
At the moment, what is happening is that this student employment is actually pushing down our economy. It's not boosting our economy because the students work for $4 and $5 an hour and there are no jobs available for our kids here. So it'll actually boost the economy.
It's a fair comment.
Which is very true. If they need employees and if they don't get these students, they will have to employ our students who know the wages, who know their rights, who will fight for them.
That's right.
Just moving on from the education sector to the business sector as such, you know, Jenny, you had a question on the business sector.
Yeah, there was one about more about to do with, you know, how New Zealand economy is basically skewed. It has regional development. Currently, much of our government's resources are directed towards Auckland.
That's right.
But how many regions need investments in their local development? I mean, lots of regions need it. How does New Zealand First plan to address such imbalance?
I think you have read too many of Winston's speeches.
Yes.
So our plan is to actually boost the regions more than just pumping into Auckland resources. Auckland, as it is overburdened because of too many immigrants coming here. It's not the immigrants' fault that the government is not able to you know, upgrade the infrastructure as the immigrants come in here. There's a total of record 71,000 immigrants coming every year. Most of them, or majority of them, in Auckland. So the infrastructure hasn't been looked after. There are people coming here with their not enough houses here, not enough schools here, and certainly not hospitals here. So that's the reason that these three systems are overstretched. Then, so once we look after our regions, then the new immigrants also will be encouraged to go to regions because everybody looks for a job. I mean, sure. We all came here. We came straight to Auckland because that's where the jobs were.
Right.
So if we are able to boost the regions by way of exports from there, now we would have seen, every single day we would have seen at the port, on railway lines, there are wagon loads of timber being exported with just the bark removed. So what we want to do is that we want to actually add value to those products and then sell it to others.
Makes it more lucrative for our country.
That's right. And more jobs then more better exports. We will actually encourage the exporters like never before.
That's on that note, let's hear to another song, Mahesh.
Most certainly.
Yeah, but before that, I'll just leave you with a thought about ethnic businesses in New Zealand. We'll just have a chat about that as such. So okay. Let's listen to this song.
All right.
Thank you.
karinaka aavas karinaka olu olu pauna kadu ye olu olu pauna kadu ye
Paula Kaduniye, Awas Karinaka. Did you follow that, Mahesh?
Yes, it's a very romantic song. I think it means that just step towards me very softly. Don't make too much of a noise.
Oh, fantastic.
am I right? Fantastic.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely right. Oh. Absolutely right. So Mahesh, I left you with that little bit of a thought, you know. Ethnic businesses, not just Indian businesses, most ethnic businesses, they seem to be conducting themselves not too in a very representative manner. Dodgy employment practices, fake employment certificates, evading taxes in this country, so on and so forth. So as an ethnic representative, you must be under tremendous pressure of somebody coming up to you, hey, I'm in this tight spot, can you bail me out? How do you deal with these situations, and what is your message to potential Indian businesses and students?
Look, Richard, I think it'll be unfair to just attribute these bad practices to one particular community. They are black sheep everywhere.
Ethnic means everybody. I mean, I'm not talking about only Indians.
Yes.
But basically, most
there have been instances where there have been cases where the Indian communities and Chinese communities have been highlighted because of these incidents. There are equal number of good practices also and good business people also. I used to work in the Mount Eden prison earlier, and I've noticed there that the number of offenders who came in, if you go by ethnicity, I think the Indian presence was less than 1%. So, which I think is not a bad result, but having come from a country where the majority of the population is law abiding, I think we can do better than that. But at the same time, it'll be unfair to say that only the Indian communities are involved in this, or only the Chinese are involved.
So what's the pressure that you get, you know? A lot of people come asking for you, come on, man, you know all the people, can you pull a few strings here and there and bail me out? Is there a lot of pressure on you on this?
Well, I've had requests where they've asked for my support, but as a matter of policy, we do not interfere in police investigations. We do not interfere in the law machinery. We do not interfere with the working of the courts.
Okay, that's really good.
The other thing about New Zealand First is the retirement age that you guys are planning, that you're not going to change the 65 years of retirement age, but you're going to change the entitlement to 10 years after 50 and to 25 years after 20. I mean, how does that work for immigrants like us? Like you said, I think in this room all of us are immigrants.
Yes,
right,
including
now.
Myself.
Yeah, including yourself. Yes. Yeah, so all of us are immigrants. Let's say if we came here at the age of 40, we wouldn't be eligible for... we would be. But if we came after 40, then we wouldn't be eligible for... Even though we came in our working life, isn't it better for us to say that people who come here who don't... Or people who live here who don't contribute to the economy, they are the ones who should be the ones who suffer rather than...
Now let's look at it in a very open and frank manner. Now, as you would know, Jenny, that a normal average Kiwi puts in about, say, 45 years of work at least before he or she is eligible for a retirement. Right? 45 years of taxpaying work.
Yeah.
Whereas if we come here, say, at the age of 45 ourselves, so that means we have already got 30 years of
free,
this thing. Correct? So I think in all fairness, we have to consider both things. That an average Kiwi puts in 45 years of work, and then they are more than 45 years of work, and then they become eligible for superannuation. And here we come here years and years after that, and we still have the same entitlement. So I think it is only rational that this is reconsidered.
What about the ones, what about the QEs that do not contribute to the economy at all? By not working.
Those who are migrated and then they just come back. So there are a lot of Kiwis who go overseas
live overseas, and then come back.
And then come back for their retirement.
Yeah. What about that?
What about them?
So then again, that is equally unfair, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, for them to get the benefit is also not, I mean, I'm really just...
Yes, so there has to be a fair policy for all, I would think.
Yes.
So, and that's what we are considering now.
Isn't income testing a better policy? I'm just being...
That could be one of the considerations. But in generality, I think all other aspects have to be taken into consideration also as to what age or what age that person has come here. That's one thing. How much has this person contributed? And what is the commitment to the country?
Yes.
Talking about the economy in a bit as well, moving towards the technology side, you know, in this day and age, we are now living in a technological age in this global world. What is New Zealand's first view towards, you know, rebooting this economy and moving from an agrarian economy to a digital economy? What's your view? What's the New Zealand's first view on that?
Our view is that one thing that our traditional traditional sources of export and traditional sources of income, such as dairy, forestry, meat industry, horticulture, these have to be strengthened, and they have to be. We would like to control the. We would like to give the Reserve Bank enough powers to control Kiwi dollar so that our exports are boosted, and also we are all for technology. It works both ways. While we strengthen our traditional industries like dairy and horticulture and meat, we would also like to invest in innovative areas such as technology.
Like, you know, in Dunedin especially, where they have the gaming sector, that has grown 3 times or 4 times into, I think, if I'm right, around 3 or 4 billion in terms of the export value, the holding. And the amount of input that goes into making a product is negligible, but the return is quite higher. Whereas in an agrarian industry like, you know, agriculture, you got to put so much in and you get so quite a lot. I know we do need food, but, you know, what is your view? What are you going to do, New Zealand First going to do from that perspective?
We believe that innovative industries such as technology and other industries where there is a higher income than the inputs, we are all for that. We do want our youngsters to be trained in technology, and then we do believe in exporting technology also.
Yeah, so because you know how we've got the digital fiber broadband, is the push going to come from New Zealand First to roll that out even to the regions, so you know we can move that across everywhere?
We've already done that. We have been promised that there'll be so much of, I'm not very technically, technically inclined, but I do know the facts that we were told that there'll be broadband in every corner of the country. That is not the case. There are hundreds of electronic monitoring applications being declined because there's no coverage in certain areas of the country, particularly Northland. The condition is that the person who's on electronic monitoring should be in an area where there is phone coverage, and there's none. So those people are declined their bail application, the electronic bail application, because they don't have the they are not in the coverage area. So that is how technically backward we are at the moment.
So you're saying that New Zealand First will sort of give an equal amount of thrust in that area as they would be giving to their traditional primary industry as such.
Yes. Whatever okay. whatever the, our principles and our policies are in our name, New Zealand first. If it is going to help New Zealand, yes, we will.
Okay. So we are running out of time, Mahesh. And so I leave you with two questions which you can answer in either order as such. One is this question on everybody's mind. How affordable a housing is your policy is going to bring about depending upon whichever party you align with? That's number one. Question number one. And this question number two is, you know, the pro-life policies as such. There are certain parties which do not follow a very pro-life policy. There is a euthanasia bill currently in the parliament as such. What is New Zealand's first stand on it?
Let's talk about housing first. Look, housing market, particularly in Auckland, is overinflated for a reason. And the reason is that Kiwis are not able to compete. Kiwis are not able to stand there in the auction house and bid for these houses because there is money coming from foreign countries which do not, those people do not have to be living here.
Yes.
Okay. And these guys have an unfair unfair advantage over us because the capital that they get, they get it at an interest rate of 0.5% or even lower. So we stand to a disadvantage there. We cannot stand in an auction and buy a house there because we don't get 4 to 5% interest rate. So we are treated. We stand to a disadvantage there. That's one thing. So second thing is that about euthanasia. We think that politicians or a bunch of politicians should not be allowed to decide on such an ethics issue, such a sensitive issue. We believe in a binding referendum for that. Every Kiwi should be able to give their input as to what they think rather than what politicians think.
Well, thank you, Mr. Brinza. That's quite loud and clear to everybody that matters of ethics should be a community decision, not a politician or a parliament decision. Thank you, Mr. Brinda. Thank you very much for having come and joined us to share your views, your personal values and principles, and that of the policies of New Zealand First.
Can I just say one thing in Konkani?
Yes, you can.
Yeah,
okay.
Sure.
To all of you, Sauglaka Dev Barakuro.
Thank you, Alston. Thank you, Jenny. Nice having you all
Thank
here
you.
And sharing your views too.
Mujhe mona diya jiye mujhe